Welcome to the AXA XL Healthcare Risk Insights Podcast. I'm your host, Shalay Hendrickson, Head of Healthcare, Bermuda. On today's podcast, we are going to focus on cultural competency in healthcare to address unconscious bias in healthcare delivery. I have the privilege of sharing this podcast with Tanya Blackman and Erica Simons. Tanya is the Executive Vice President and Chief Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity Officer for Novant Health. In her role, Tanya uses diversity and inclusion to strengthen key functions at Novant and to achieve business and patient care objectives, creating a culture in which everyone is valued. Also with me is my colleague, Erica Simons. Erica serves as our diversity and inclusion representative for AXA XL Bermuda. She coordinates D&I initiatives and activities for the Bermuda platform. Welcome, Tanya and Erica.
Thank you.
Before we jump into cultural competency, I want to take a minute to highlight Novant's board and why Tanya is the most fitting guest to address this topic today. Novant has been very intentional with board diversity. Novant was recently recognized by the National Association of Corporate Directors for board practices that promote greater diversity and inclusion. So congratulations to the team at Novant. Tanya, talk to us about Novant's journey to obtain a diverse board.
Thank you. Diversity and inclusion for Novant Health is one of our core values. And when something is your core value, it's really you're saying, this is who we are. And we start with our board of trustees. It's been exciting to watch our board grow over the years. Diversity and inclusion and embedding that has been a real journey for us. But as our president and CEO, Carl Amato, started thinking about diversity and inclusion, he really felt like this was a way for us to really connect with the communities we serve and to ensure that we're delivering on the remarkable patient experience. And so we started talking about how do we make sure that our board and our workforce reflects the communities that we serve? And as he started looking at that, he looked at not only race and ethnicity, but he looked at education, the particular businesses our board members were in. He looked at the veteran status. So we have a general on the board. So he really tried to look at diversity and inclusion in a very inclusive way on the board that would help Novant Health be successful, not only today, but also in the future.
Thanks, Tanya. Novant's board of trustees has 20 people, which includes 6 women and 4 African Americans. In addition, their executive team has 11 people, which includes 5 men and 5 African Americans. I'm excited to share Novant's stats with our audience because 47% of nonprofit hospital boards lack a single racial or ethnic minority member. Tanya, I would imagine that Novant's board didn't always have this representation. How did your CEO, Carl Amato, encourage board members that may have been less receptive to diverse and inclusive board?
It's really interesting. When I joined this role, I've been with the organization for over 20 years and had been the president of 2 of our hospitals. And so when Carl asked me to take this role, he said, I really want you to operationalize our core value of diversity and inclusion. With that, I did a listening tour across our organization to really understand where the organization, 30,000 team members, believed we were in terms of diversity and inclusion. As a part of that listening tour, I actually did the tour with our board of trustees. In that meeting, our board talked about where they wanted to see Novant Health in 3 to 5 years and the real business case for having a much more diverse workforce and creating an inclusive environment. And so when Carl had me do that, it was from there that we started looking at where we had opportunities on our board and where do we have opportunities in our workforce. And so from that, we've been able to have a board that has people who represent the academia area of expertise, as I mentioned, the military, financial, not-for-profits, a wide range of people from different backgrounds. And I think the board, as well as Carl, realize having those varying perspectives will prepare Novant Health for the future. One of the things that our CEO did as well is that he asked the nominating and governance committee of the board to be responsible for monitoring the effectiveness of the diversity and inclusion initiatives. That's really pretty progressive. Not many boards do that. Carl did that, and that has really been very helpful in continuing to have the board involved in our work.
That's excellent, Tanya. Cultural competency within healthcare refers to the ability of healthcare professionals to understand, communicate with, and effectively interact with patients across cultures. Tanya, can you tell us a few initiatives happening at Novant that are helping to improve cultural competency throughout the workforce?
Yes, there are several that I believe have helped us. One has been, we have a software system called Lip and Cot for our nursing teams. And that system has informational cultural perspectives so that the nurses can actually go in the system and learn different things about people from different backgrounds. As a part of that, we bought the part of the system where we have all of our discharge instructions and medication instructions in 19 different languages. We embrace the term health equity. We actually define health equity using Healthy People 2020's definition, which says that we are working to achieve the highest attainment of health for all people. And so when you think about health equity and think about that, you think about cultural competency and making sure that your workforce is involved in understanding people from different backgrounds. I have a great example of a story related to our hospital physicians, the hospitalists, who are wonderful. And they see 80% of our patients in the hospital, excluding our moms and babies. And so we embarked upon a program called Quality Interactions. It's really a cultural competency program where these physicians were able to become educated. It was a web-based education on caring for patients from different backgrounds. It's scenario-based, so they had to answer questions related to the patients. And then they would have a test at the end to see if there were any unconscious biases. And if they got some, they didn't answer a question correctly. There was a link to the New England Journal of Medicine to help them understand about the biases. I'm happy to report that pre the education, our patients take HCAHPS surveys. That's a Medicare survey on patient satisfaction. And we were measuring the patient satisfaction with the physician. Before the cultural competency education, our physicians collectively in this particular group scored at the 29th percentile ranking. Post the education, they scored in the 77th percentile ranking. So they really have felt like they learned a lot about themselves as well as their patients and how to care for them to meet their unique needs.
Thank you, Tanya. This is Erica here. So I'm going to turn to very much so related to what you just discussed. The book Just Medicine, A Cure for Racial Inequality in American Healthcare, explores the idea that unconscious racial and ethnic biases held by healthcare providers might explain racial disparities in health. Statistics show that African American and Native American women are over 3 times more likely to die from causes related to pregnancy compared to white women. In addition, Black women are more likely to be undertreated for pain as compared to white Americans. Now, we might say that this is a phenomenon that affects the lower income classes, but that wouldn't necessarily be true. And we're going to explore the story of Serena Williams and the birth of her first child. Serena recently shared her traumatic birth experience. She asserts that she explained her symptoms in great detail to the nurse, yet her comments were dismissed, and the nurse thought that her meds were making her delusional. Serena almost lost her life. This is just one example of how Black women are treated in a medical setting. With this story in mind, what programs are in place at Novant to tackle lack of awareness of potential unconscious bias?
Well, one of the things that we're doing as we really expand our work in health equity is that we're beginning to look at all of our data by something we call real gaps. That's segmenting our data by race, ethnicity, language, gender, age, payer source, and soon sexual orientation and gender identity. So for us, looking at our data in that way makes a big difference. You don't know what you don't know if you aren't looking at it. From that, we've learned several things. We now have a long-term goal, a health equity long-term goal that's related to breast cancer screening mammograms. We found in looking at our data that our Latinas and our Asian women have a lower breast cancer screening rate than other populations. Along with those would be Native American and Pacific Islander. So we decided to be pretty bold and have a long-term 3-year goal that is to increase the screening rate for Latinas and Asian women. And not only that, but for overall all women. One of the things that we've learned is that when you focus on the gap, you improve care for everyone. I'll give you an example of where we actually won a Center for Medicare and Medicaid award for health equity by closing the gap. With our patients who were African American and white, looking at our pneumonia patients, there was a 4 percentage point gap between the readmission rates. And as an organization, we had been focusing on the readmission rates, but no one had ever looked at the gaps and why there was a gap between two races. We actually looked at everything, but it was between two races. When we started focusing on the gap and making system changes, we actually improved the readmission rate for everyone. So the readmission rate for Blacks ended up being 11%, and for whites, it ended up being 11%. Those are a couple of the examples of things that we have done to focus on the gap and to improve health equity. You mentioned Serena. We are looking at that. We are looking at childbirth and issues that women face during childbirth. And right now, we're starting to do the real gaps, as I mentioned, looking at who is that impacting? Is it impacting younger women, Black, white, Asian, Latina? We're looking at all the demographics to see where the gaps are.
Tanya, thank you for that. I'm hearing that you are heavily focused on data and analytics. Can you talk about how that's informing the choices that you'll make for the future of all of your programs going forward?
Yes. We have a health equity council that's chaired by two of our physicians, Dr. Cherie Gregory and Dr. Ophelia Garman-Brown. And this council was established for us to start identifying how we're addressing gaps, or actually identifying the gaps. So we have each of our institutes, whether it's the Cardiovascular Institute, the Women's and Children's Institute, the Oncology, all the institutes, the Orthopedics Institute, they come and present where they have identified gaps. And from that, they have to come up with a plan on how they're going to address those gaps and report back to this committee. In our orthopedics group, for example, they found there was a large gap in terms of readmission rates for patients who had joint replacements. Ones who were married couples did not seem to return as much, but the widowers had a high return rate, readmission rate to the hospital. And so we've put community health workers in touch with those patients so that we can figure out what do they need in their homes so that they aren't readmitting and that they are comfortable after surgery.
Thank you. Tanya, according to a survey conducted by the Kaiser Foundation, 75% of physicians felt that the minority patients receive lower levels of care than white patients. Do you believe that this data is accurate? And how would the results differ at Novant?
We have not found that that is the case, but I would not rule that out. I think as we've started looking at our real gaps, we are finding differences in outcomes. I have an example of where we've looked at, does our workforce really reflect the communities we serve? We had lactation consultants, for example, on our women's unit. We were working to make sure that all of our hospitals were baby friendly, which means that we really try to increase the breastfeeding rate and decrease the formula feeding rate. What we found was that our women of color were using formula at a higher rate than our women who were white or Caucasian. When we started looking at that, we found that all of our lactation consultants were white. And so there was no one reflecting the people of color in our organization. And so when we focused on that and built a partnership with Johnson C. Smith University, which is a historically Black college and university here, they wrote a grant to have lactation consultants of color. Our organization is a preceptor site for that, our clinical site. And we hired also lactation consultants of color. And what we have seen is that there's been a significant decrease in the formula used with our women of color. And at the same time, there's been a decrease in the formula rate of our Caucasian moms as well.
How does Novant deal with the unconscious or in some cases implicit bias of medical professions towards the LGBTQ+ community?
We're doing a lot of work in the, we call it the SOGI, Sexual Orientation Gender Identity Initiative, where we actually started collecting data. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid initially said you had to collect data on the LGBTQ population for 3 months. Well, in the Novant Health fashion, we really committed to quality. We couldn't collect data and then stop. That was a meaningful use requirement. So we've continued, and we have a LGBTQ community advisory group that comes and helps us understand the population and how to provide the care in the way that's remarkable for that population of patients. We just completed a computer-based learning that was required of all 30 team members at Novant Health that helped them understand the LGBTQ population and how to provide better care. This is another health equity initiative in that we know the LGBTQ population is at high risk for healthcare disparities because they're not going to come in and get care for fear of alienation. So we're doing a lot of work in this space. As a recognition of some of the work, we've all 14 of our hospitals have been recognized as leaders in LGBTQ health equality in the country. So we're really pretty proud of that.
Tanya, that's very impressive. Just to switch a little bit, a culture of inclusion encompasses a deliberate strategy for hiring, promotion, and retention of underrepresented groups. At Novant, I see that the Chief Human Resource Officer also sits on your executive team. Can you share with us the involvement of human resources to enforce cultural competency?
The Chief Human Resource Officer and I really have a great partnership. That position is vacant today, but we've had a great partnership in working together. We utilize our business resource groups, and we have about 12 of those groups who actually help the recruiters to go to communities and understand how to recruit from different communities. The HR team has really tried various websites, whether it's the Black Nurses Association, the Hispanic Nurses Association, the Veterans Association. We are trying lots of different websites and sources to find talent. Our business resource groups, as I mentioned, we have several. One is a women's group. It's a veterans group. We have an Asian group, a Latino group, a Black African-American group, a Native American group, a persons with abilities group. So we're using our internal talent, as well as connecting with websites and the media to make sure we get our voices out there and find the best talent. Our goal is to really reflect the communities that we serve. As I mentioned to you about the lactation consultant, when we found that there was a gap and that our women of color were not connecting, we figured out what to do. And we've made really significant improvements in health for those patients.
Underrepresented groups are expected to reach over 50% of the U.S. population by 2050. What pivots, if any, does Novant intend to make to adjust to this change in population?
We're always looking at our population. We see the difference in our workforce, in our communities, in our patients. So we're always looking at ways to connect to the community, whether it's through our community engagement team, through our foundation, through our business resource groups. We're always working at ways that we can reach our community. Our mission to improve the health of our communities one person at a time isn't just something on paper. That is really what we believe. And when you believe that, you really work to create an inclusive environment for all. When I think about us, I think about if I could put our strategic plan for diversity, inclusion, and equity into three big buckets, I'd say we want to be the healthcare provider of choice, the employer of choice, and a national leader in health equity. And if you're putting that out there to do that, you have to be pretty serious and committed about what you're doing.
Tanya, that sounds wonderful. In our industry, we talk a lot about metrics and what we consider success. Can you share what your organization views as success with all of the initiatives that you've taken on board?
Yes. One thing I'd say that we did in the very beginning is really be clear about that embedding diversity, inclusion, and equity was not about a program. There are programmatic components, but it's really not about a program. It has been a culture change strategy for us. And so when you make it your culture change strategy and it's aligned with your strategic business imperatives, it's pretty easy to know that you have to have measurements. Because we believe diversity and inclusion go together, we started with accountability on inclusion. And we did a 3-year goal that looked at the question on our employee or team member engagement survey that says this organization values team members from different backgrounds. So we took 3 years and worked on that goal. And we started at the 69th percentile ranking. And we wanted to be, by the end of 2019, to be at the 90th percentile ranking. I'm very pleased to tell you that we ended 2019 at the 95th percentile ranking. So we were very excited about that. So we didn't stop there because I think a danger is becoming complacent and thinking, oh, we've made it. We're there. You have to keep going. So for the next 3 years, we're also looking at inclusion metrics. We're looking at that same question. We value team members from different backgrounds, that you feel a sense of belonging in Novant Health. We've learned that when people feel like they belong, then the sky is the limit. People are innovative, they're efficient, they deliver on the remarkable patient experience and your strategic imperatives. We don't want to lose sight that we want our leaders to continue to demonstrate their commitment to diversity and inclusion, and that the organization demonstrates its commitment to diversity and inclusion. So we're including those questions for our next 3-year goals as well. We are looking at workforce diversity and representation, making sure that we're reflecting the communities that we serve. And then if all of that's working well, then we will achieve health equity and improved outcomes for our patients. So we have a 3-year long-term goal on the mammogram screenings for the community of women that we serve.
That is fantastic. There is compelling evidence that suggests that diversity in the healthcare workforce improves healthcare delivery, which is what you've just articulated. Would you be able to share with us another success story that you are particularly proud of yourself?
Yeah, we have a lot. One thing that I would say is our supplier diversity piece. We have been committed to the upward mobility of our communities. And so we started on our journey in 2006 of contracting with women and minority-owned business enterprises. And we started spending, we called it our opportunity spend, the goods and service that we could buy from someone other than certain providers or suppliers. And we started at $18 million spending in 2006. We closed 2019 at the $1 million mark. So from 2006 to 2019, we have spent $1 billion with minority women-owned businesses and suppliers. So we are very excited about that.
I think we're all excited about that. That speaks volumes. And as the head of diversity and inclusion for the Bermuda platform, I am completely blown away by the initiatives that you shared with us today. I'd love to pick your brains further on another.
Yeah, I would love to tell you one more thing I didn't say was about you were talking about cultural competency. We have transcultural health managers. They are nurses who are actually in the Office of Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity, who are responsible for increasing the cultural competence of the clinical teams. They've been doing a lot of work recently in the transgender space with the gender-affirming surgeries, that we are really making it a place that patients who come feel like this is the place for them. They feel included and welcomed as they're going through their journey. One thing I'm also proud of is our leadership, our president and CEO, and our executive team. All this work would not have happened if we did not have a president who was committed. And he placed me on the executive team as well, which has really made a difference, that to be at the table with the CEO and the other executive team members truly makes a difference in an organization. It says to the whole world, the whole organization, this is important. So without our president and CEO making this a part of his strategic business priorities, I don't know that we would be where we are today. There's a program that I also established called LIFT, Leveraging Internal Female Talent. One of the things that I learned on my listening tour, and I didn't know that, but kind of knew that most of our workforce was comprised of females, but 82% of our workforce is female. And when I did the listening tour 4 years ago, only one person on the executive team was female. Well, Carl Amato really started thinking about that and looking at that and realized that he wanted more voices at the table, more female voices. I developed this program along with Dr. Cherie Gregory called LIFT, Leveraging Internal Female Talent. And we started looking at the top high-performing women in the organization, We've had two classes now. So we've had 50 women go through the class. It's a year-long program so that we could help these women understand more about executive presence and really have them prepared for C-suite type jobs. I'm happy to say that 50% of the women who have gone through the program have either been promoted to a higher position or they have expanded their scope. And the program is for directors up to VPs.
That's fantastic. Can you talk about your experience sharing what is a very impressive program with your peers in the industry? And can you talk from an overall perspective of the industry? How do you think that Novant particularly has changed the landscape as respects cultural competency in healthcare industry?
I talk to my peers in the industry, and I think we're all doing a lot of great things and all feel like this is a journey for us. I think one of the things that has been somewhat unique for us is I didn't come from the diversity and inclusion field. I came from operations. And I remember when Carl asked me to take the position, he said, I like that you understand the business and the people side of healthcare, because this is a business our business is taking care of people. So I think more and more leaders in the field are really understanding how to align this work with their business, which I think is really key. If it is seen as something separate and a program, we all know what happens to programs. When there's no funding, they go away. But our goal has been to embed this work into every fabric of our being in this business. So it's not a standalone program. It is embedded into everything that we do. The vision has been that all of our team members will apply a diversity and inclusion and equity lens to all of their decision-making and their behaviors. I think that we are all in this field working to make sure that it is embedded in our work. It continues to be challenging. I think that shifting a culture to embed diversity and inclusion has to be intentional. And there has to be a long-term focus that requires true accountability.
I would like to thank Tanya and Erica for your time today. Tanya, you have provided us with insights on cultural competency that I trust will be useful for our listeners. Thank you for listening to the XXL Healthcare Risk Insights podcast. Stay tuned for future podcasts where we will dive deep into other current and developing risks impacting the healthcare industry.